Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hey everybody, my name is Ryan Cassidy, and this is the first episode of A Coach, A Captain, and A Conversation podcast. I'm joined by the head coach of the York College Spartans men's lacrosse program, Brandon Childs. Coach, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Rye. I am super pumped to get this started. Really excited to have a conversation with you, you know, and I just want to start off by telling all of our listeners that you and I are not the experts, and that we just have an interest in team development and culture, and thought that a series of podcasts on things outside of X's and O's and recruiting could be a lot of fun, and we're just going to discuss a lot of different resources that you and I have used and stumbled across to, you know, to kind of help with our teams and what we've done. But we're certainly not the experts, but we hope everybody, you know, can kind of learn from some of the resources that we point out throughout these conversations.
Now, these will be monthly podcasts, and we'll discuss kind of major topics throughout the year. What will we be going over for episode one?
On episode one, we're going to talk about captains. We're going to talk about team captains today and, you know, some of the what makes a great team captain. Some of the best team captains we've seen, and just kind of how you could become a great team captain, or as a coach, how do you mentor people, you know, towards being a team captain that you want your team to have.
So when you kind of first started to think about you know, the stuff that we're going to be talking about in this podcast, what drew you to looking at the importance of captains or developing captains?
Yeah, you know, when I started as a coach, I thought a lot about, you know, captains and is there value in captains, or is it better to have a leadership, you know, team, or and ultimately I decided that the only way in which a captain would serve its purpose is if it was a really big deal. So with our program, you know, the captains wear the C on their jersey, and we just decided to make it more than just the guy that goes out for the coin toss. And I think that's the first place you got to start as a coach is, is there validity in having a team captain or captains? And if so, if it is, then you got to make it a big deal. It's got to be a level of responsibility to it. And that's kind of how I first started. So now that I decided it was going to be a really big deal, then we decided to look real deep into, you know, what do we want our team captain to be?
So before we go into really the topic of captains and voting versus, you know, the coach picking, the number of captains, I think it's important first to kind of establish, one, what a captain is, what the definition of a captain is. For you, when you think about the team captain, what are some of the characteristics or traits that maybe you thought of initially, and then even after kind of thinking about captains, how has that changed?
Yeah, you know, I think the first thing that coaches might do wrong with captains is trying to find that guy in your program that kind of best represents your program. And so you're looking for that guy who's like really hardworking. You're looking for that guy that gets straight A's. You're looking for that guy that does community service hours, you know, just that guy that, like, you know, you'd let your daughter marry, you know? But I'm not so sure, you know, that maybe, you know, and I think this is where, when you read The Captain's Class by Sam Walker, it gets you just rethinking a lot about it. I'm not so sure you'd want your daughter to marry some of these captains that are super, super successful. You know, and the first word, and this is stolen, you know, from a conversation that I had with Coach Starja, the former coach at UVA, about what makes great captain. And the word he used was unreasonable. And I really like it. And again, going back to this, you'd want that representation of your program to be reasonable. You know, you'd want them to be easy to get along with. You'd want them to be compassionate and empathetic and to everyone that they would come across, which is how you'd want your program presented. But what your team needs is a guy who's willing to be unreasonable, I think. And I really liked that. And I think you can't just show up and be unreasonable. There's a process that has to take place. And so as I read this book, I started as a combination of, you know, Coach Starge's word of unreasonable. And then reading this book, I really started to think to myself, like, maybe this great representation of your program is not necessarily who your captain should be.
When I think of a captain, when I read this book, the first thing that kind of came to mind was a time when Joe Ehrman actually came to York and he gave a talk about what it means to be a man. And it seemed to parallel our ideal captain that we have in our mind. And I love this quote from the book. It says, "Most of us carry a faded old picture in our heads of what a great captain looks like. It's usually an attractive person who possesses an abundance of strength, skill, wisdom, charisma, diplomacy, and unflappable calm." And I think a lot of times we also associate that with, you know, what being a man's like. And Joe Ehrman simplified it to, you know, being a man really comes down to two things. It's relationships and then being a part of something that's bigger than yourself. And I thought it was great in the book that Sam also broke down the seven attributes of really what it meant to be an elite captain. It's extreme doggedness and focus in competition, aggressive play that tests the limits of the rules, a willingness to do thankless jobs in the shadows, a low-key, practical, and democratic communication style. They motivate others with passionate, nonverbal displays. They have strong convictions and the courage to stand apart. And then lastly, they have ironclad emotional control. So when you think about the captains that have led teams that you've been a part of or that you've coached, you know, were there any that had all seven of those, or were there some guys that came pretty close to that?
Yeah, you know, if you go to the website buysamwalker.com, you can actually take a quiz on here, a captain's class quiz. And I've shared this with my coworkers here at York, and our baseball coach, he's taken this quiz like 25 times to try to get the perfect score, to try to be the perfect captain. And he hasn't figured out the right formula yet. You know, it is so, and when I'm bringing this up because it is so rare to find this really, really fine combination of some key essentials to being a great captain. And so, you know, there's a couple guys that definitely come to mind that we've had. We might have one of them here now. And the evolution of how you become those seven things is probably what's most important to the people listening, whether you're listening from a player standpoint right now and how do I become that captain who's of that team? How am I the Tim Duncan to my team or the Carla Overbeck to my team? Or you're the coach who needs a Carla Overbeck in your program or needs a Tim Duncan in your program. And I think it all starts with in the beginning of the process. So you're a freshman. I think in that part of the process, it's, you know, how well can you fit in? You know, I think a lot of times when you come as a freshman and you want to have an impact, you try to stand out. And it's the worst thing you could do as a captain. I think the first thing you got to do is really try to fit in. And so your first year, what you're doing and you're working on doing is trying to find or earn, I guess, the respect of everybody else. Because I think the first thing you need to do is not be well liked, but be well respected. And the first way in which you do it is by fitting in, not standing out. You know, and then that same year, your first year, you got to make a lot of tough plays. You know, there's that 50-50 ground ball that you're going to pick up, and you know you're about to get a hard slap check right to the arm. You know, you either go through that ground ball or you do the old little hip check, you know, and try to get the loose ball push or something. If you can just fit in and make a lot of those tough plays, you're well on your way, you know, to being one of these. But the problem is that happens early on in your career. So a couple mistakes here and a couple mistakes there. This reminds me of another book, Chop Wood, Carry Water by Joshua Metcalf, where he talks about building your own house. And you don't real if you don't realize you're building your own house with every decision you make, you're not going to build the best house. And so early on in your career, the decisions you make are setting you up to be this guy. And what you find sometimes is they want to be the captain later on in their career, but they didn't put the foundation in early on by fitting in. So I've seen a lot of guys fit in and make a lot of tough plays, and then they kind of mess it up along the way. I've seen a lot of guys kind of mess it right from the get-go, you know, but I think that's the starting point, you know, early in your career.
How much of becoming that captain do you think is developed versus it coming naturally and you're not necessarily intentional about it? One thing that struck me in the book was a lot of these captains, when you hear the stories of how they gained respect of their teammates, it was almost unanimously like this innocent effort that was some feat. And again, it's usually nothing. It's not scoring the game-winning goal. It's getting knocked down for the 50th time and just getting back up. And these captains inspired their teammates just by effort. And it didn't seem like it was necessarily planned of, I'm going to give my best so that I become a captain. It was, this is just who I am. I don't give up. You know, I'm going to make the play. And if I'm not going to make it, I'm going to at least try. And if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down swinging. So how much of being that elite captain or just that captain, that how much of that is developed versus kind of you're just kind of born with it?
I think the first thing I would say is it's not necessarily the effort that is winning that captain over or winning that team over. It's kind of the motivation behind the effort. And what I mean by that is, you said it earlier, but there's got to be some sort of like constant effort for the good of the team. And I think what happens a lot of times is there's these guys that have a lot of leadership qualities, but they like to be the leader. And so their motivation is kind of ego driven. Going back to your point with Coach Ehrman, I think what distinguishes these captains as being so unique is the effort that they put in and the plays that they make, regardless of sport, regardless of who you're playing, regardless of the game, the effort is just unwavering. I mean, they are just, for the good of the team, everything they got. The captain's class talks about Wayne Shelford, the captain of the New Zealand All Blacks, and just gruesome injury in an exhibition game that in most people's eyes counted for nothing. In his eyes, it counted for everything. If I'm wearing the All Blacks jersey, then I'm going to go all in this game. And so you're earning the respect of the rest of the team by how hard you play and why you're playing that hard and where you're playing that hard. You know, what is the situation and how are you playing? And if it is unanimously seen in the eyes of the team as for the good of the team, then you're going to have a great follow. And so I guess you started the question off by saying, asking, you know, how much of this is developed and how much of this are you born with? And I think a lot of it is developed. You know, I think kind of how you were raised and how you were taught to handle certain situations, whether you're a me guy or a we guy, is going to go a long way to developing, you know, your leadership, you know, capabilities is how I would put it.
If you had to give, now, again, after reading this book and talking with different coaches, if you had to give kind of a definition of what your ideal captain is now in kind of layman's terms, what would you say that it would be?
I would pick five words probably to try to put into the definition. I don't know how well I can articulate it in one sentence right now, but the words that come to mind is servant. You know, I think your Humbleness to serve other people is your platform to lead. And so first and foremost, as a captain, you got to serve. The book talks about Carla Overbeck carrying the bags for the 1999 U.S. Women's World Cup championship team. She used to carry their bags to their hotel room, and then at practice just demand so much of them. But she used the fact that she carried their bags everywhere they went as her platform to, to be demanding on the field. So I think the first thing you got to do is serve. And I think by serving other people, you're gaining their trust, which is the second word. You know, I think you have to be very trustworthy as a captain. People have to understand that you have the good of the team as your compass. So you got to be trustworthy. So serve, you got to be trustworthy. You've got to be relentless in your pursuit for excellence in regards of the team. And so that kind of goes to the word, unreasonable, but like the good of the team, even if it's a really difficult decision, the good of the team is going to make that decision for you. And that part's hard, you know? And so you have to be relentless, in terms of how you're going to play, how you're going to lift, how you're going to run, how you're going to show up at study hall. You just can't take a day off when it comes to what is best for our team, because everyone's watching you, you know? So to serve one, to be really trustworthy, to be relentless. And then I guess I said five, I'll just stick with four. I think the last thing is just, humble. You know, you just have to be willing. I think one of the things that when you look at the list of the captains that Sam Walker discovers, and maybe we're making it too much about his book. I can think of countless other people that I've encountered that were great captains. They're almost uncomfortable by the spotlight. You know, go ahead and throw a microphone in front of Tim Duncan and watch him squirm. You know, like, he is uncomfortable. Bill Russell from the Boston Celtics, he didn't want to do interviews. He didn't even want to talk to the fans in Boston. He was just about his team. The spotlight makes them uncomfortable, and it's because they don't seek that. They are about the team. And so it takes a humility to be this kind of a captain. And so I guess they're the words that come to mind. How you sum that up in one definition, I guess, is as simple as: to be a great captain, you need to serve, you need to be trustworthy, you need to be relentless in your pursuit of the excellence of the team, and you need to be humble through it all. And as you look at the examples that, you know, everyone listening right now can think back to that team they were on where they had that one player, you know, and that one player, you know, of that one team that you're thinking of right now, exemplifies all those four things, I think.
Now that we've defined really what a captain is and kind of come to terms with that word and that meaning, now as we transition to electing captains or voting for captains or picking your captains, at York, what is that process like? And then, two, when you think about a team electing and voting for a captain versus a coach selecting a captain, where do you fall on that issue?
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say is you got to have the right captain. And so I don't think having the team decide or having the coach decide, I don't think that matters as much as making sure you get the right one. Now, I think you should start with the team. The team will get a vote, you know, at least here at York, you know, and if I felt like they didn't get the right one, quite honestly, you know, I'm okay. Maybe making the call myself, you know, and communicating that with the team. But I think if you do a good job, you know, instilling your culture, the team usually gets it right. So I think you start with the team vote. How we do it here at York with the team vote is we give every player one vote. I think when you give players multiple votes, it opens up the whole idea of, well, who's gonna, you know, who's going to represent the team when the newspaper shows up? Like, who's going to be the one that talks? Because our best captain's not getting in front of the microphone. You know, who's going to be the one that goes out in the coin toss and shakes the ref's hand and is super polite and all that kind of stuff? Like, who, you know, and if you get give them multiple votes, they start to think of all of those things that maybe they've kind of assumed was a captain's responsibility. And so then they start voting for that guy that, you know, the golden child of the program, as opposed to the right captain. And to give them one vote, usually they start to think of, like, you know, it's tie game in the fourth quarter, it's 9-9, you know, there's a ground ball. Who do I want to go get that ground ball? You know, who do I want on my team? Who do I want in my foxhole? And when they do that, they usually get it right. And so we only give them one vote, so they start thinking in that kind of a mindset. And then when they vote, they do it in my office with me face-to-face. They tell me who they're voting for so that I can ask them why, you know. And sometimes they get it right, and I move on to the next question. Sometimes they get it right, and I ask them to divulge a little bit into why they picked that gentleman, you know. And in some rare situations, you get an instance of a kid who he realizes he is this guy. You know, I am the captain of this team, but because I'm uncomfortable, because I don't really want the spotlight, I'm not going to vote for myself. But as the coach, I know he knows he's the captain. And then I ask him why he didn't vote for himself. And we start to pull that onion back a little bit. So I think when you do it in person, you can really get an idea as to why the kid is voting for the captain. And then by giving him one vote, you're not leaving it up to much interpretation of facilitating multiple, you know, roles. So that's how we do it here. And it seems to be, you know, it seems to work for us.
You know, something that I think is really important with college programs and high school programs is the coach implementing a culture that establishes what you're voting for and what you look for in a captain. Because I think with the vote, a lot of times, especially freshmen, can vote for maybe the senior that just happened to be the guy that welcomed them when they got to campus, and or a guy that maybe was the social coordinator rather than the guy who's probably going to get in your grill and tell you something you don't want to hear, but it's what you need to hear. So when you think about, again, the captains that you've coached and even served under, served with, can you give examples of guys that did the four things that you talked about?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that you've hit on the head, I think as a coach, it's really important that we really communicate. You know, I'm thinking of this year at the IMLCA convention, Joe Amplo from Marquette spoke, and he could have been talking about anything and I would have been all in. I mean, he is an amazing communicator. I have very little doubt that the people at Marquette, when they vote for captains, are clear what they're voting for, because I am certain that Joe Amplo can communicate what the role of a captain should be. And so I think the first thing as a coach, when it comes to who's voting, whether it's a freshman all the way through senior, the idea that a freshman really doesn't even know what they're voting for yet, and part of that falls on the responsibility of the coach to make sure that he communicates clearly, to those freshmen what it is that they're voting for. The other thing is this idea of, like, tradition. And, you know, you get this guy, you know, very rarely do you get this captain that we're talking about, you know, that just the perfect example. But when you do, you gotta, his legacy has to remain, you know. And I think of George Biordi at Cornell and just the legacy that he left. When people at Cornell vote for a captain, they know what they're voting for, whether a freshman or not. And so when you have this instance, you have this guy, as weird as this is even going to sound, like, maybe retiring his number or something in your program, or, you know, so when that freshman comes in, like, well, I don't have number 33 or, you know, whatever it is. But something that you could do that would draw attention to that legacy of the one guy you did have, you know, or you name the captain, you know, the captaincy after him or something. We don't do any of that here at York, but it's worth considering so that those freshmen know what they're voting for, you know. And obviously the longer they're here, I think the more they're going to understand the culture and understand, you know, who best, you know, fits that role. But I mean, I can think of a lot of good ones. I mean, there's a kid at Towson right now named Zach Goodrich, who I coached in club lacrosse, who, I mean, Zach Goodrich, I could tell as a sophomore in high school had it, you know, like, you know, I don't want to speak for the folks down at Towson, but I'd like to think if we got Coach Nallen on this call right now, he'd come right out and say that Zach exemplifies everything that we've said. And I guarantee you he can be unreasonable. I guarantee you that he works really hard at the little things so that he can be, you know, the country's best short stick D-mitty. Like, he is what we've talked about, right? He's not about himself, or he'd be an offensive midfielder, right? And so he's a guy that maybe some people that are listening to this phone call know and can identify as a Division I guy. You know, I can think of guys that I played with that no one on this call is gonna know who I'm talking about. But there are other guys that that I've seen that have done a really good job of leaving a legacy. So then you hope the next guys that are gonna vote kind of know what it is they're trying to elect. You know?
Yeah, I mean, the guy that always comes to mind for me is the head coach of Scranton now is Michael Hoffmeister. And I think the reason that I voted for him, a lot of it had to do with how you framed the question. There's a book that I ended up buying called Think Like a Champion that you would always read from. And it was the little chapter on mental toughness, and it talked about the foxhole. And what I think is great about that, and I honestly would recommend it to any coach before they elect or vote for captains, is reading that passage to the team, because it almost takes lacrosse out in sports, and you know, whether or not you're the best player on the team, it almost nullifies that, because it discusses when the going gets tough and you're in that metaphorical foxhole, and there's bullets flying over, you're getting shelled, who do you want essentially to, like, take care of you? That's how I always interpret it. Like, if I'm wounded, what guy do I want picking me up and carrying me back? And it had nothing to do with the fact that Hoff was a starter. It had everything to do with, again, going back to what Joe Ehrman said, I knew he had a relationship with me because he was very intentional with me and making sure that we had a great relationship. And there was no doubt in my mind that, just observing Hoff, that the team was more important to him than himself, and he was willing to do whatever it took to help the team. And really putting, again, something in context as a captain, that's what I would always envision. I always would ask myself, what would Hoff do? And so when I'm running in the 104-degree heat in Texas in the offseason, I'm envisioning Hoff, knowing that Hoff wouldn't quit on this run. And when the days that I wake up and I don't want to go work out, I knew that Hoff would do that for me. And I almost put myself in that foxhole, being that person that other people need to depend on. And it's going to sound really weird, but you can almost see it in how guys play. And I was talking to JL Reppert this morning about this, about captains. And I just told him, I was like, you just watch the way IDA plays. Like, I didn't even know if he was a captain, but he's a captain in my mind. Same thing with Zach Goodrich. If I had no idea who he was and I just watched him, the way that he plays, I would assume it's like, that's a guy that I want to follow. And again, as a coach, if you put that in context and you really kind of put the blinders on your players to let them know the value system of what a captain is, it allows you a better percentage to have that guy if, you know, he's on your team.
Yeah, you know, the book, the Think Like a Champion chapter, it's a cool book because it's got, like, I don't know, 92 chapters based on one word. So one of them's mental toughness. It's chapter 75. I got this one down. It's memorized, you know. But it says, you know, if you want to improve your mental toughness, the easiest way to do is think of the foxhole, you know. And then it says, okay, well, let's define it. And they define the guy in the foxhole as someone who is actively seeking to make everything better. That's the definition. The guy that you choose in your foxhole is someone who is actively seeking to make everything better. And that's what you remember about Hoff. You know, that's what people in this program remembered about you. That's what people at Towson will remember about Zach Goodrich. And that's what people at Maryland will remember about Isaiah Davis Allen, is they were actively seeking to make everything better. The locker room, the bus trip, the practice, the scouting report, the weight room, the study hall. Just what can I do right now to make this better? And if you do that all of the time, you become trustworthy, you become all those things I talked about earlier. And so inevitably, you're the guy they follow. If they can just see that, like, consistent focus on making everything better, it again makes you the easy guy to follow. But in order to do it, you got to be humble. You're not actively consistently making yourself better. You're actively consistently making everything better. And there's so many of us. You know, I was a lousy, I don't even know if I was a captain, you know, because if I was, I was a lousy one. I wasn't a great leader as a team. You know, I think I was actively seeking to try to make myself better. And I think it takes a real special kid to actively, make everything better. And that's the definition of the foxhole as it's read in that book. And again, you can do some things as a culture and a program, you know, by giving out, you know, postseason awards. So here at York, you know, we don't give out MVP, we don't give out any of that kind of stuff. We have one award, and it is the Foxhole Award, and it's given to that one guy who actively seeks to make everything better. And as you do that over the course of time, you know, you're defining, and as I said earlier about Coach Ample, you're communicating to your, you know, to your team exactly what they're looking for in their captain.
When I was a captain at York, one of the things that I realized, and again, a lot of it had to do with the captains that I served under, with you and the conversations I had with you about developing as a leader, was in the fall when we broke up into lifting groups. What I asked you, and again, I think it was like a point system, and the team that had the most points at the end of the semester got some prize, or it was something. And for me, I could not have cared less about the prize. It was more about developing that first recruiting class you bought in. And so I asked you to give me the three most important freshmen that, with regards to developing that work ethic, and it was Josh Kluver, Andrew Gamble, and Dimitri Paleokostas. And I remember just working with those freshmen, my whole goal was just to show them what hard work looked like. And so if we had three sets of squats, we would do four. If we were supposed to do, you know, five 200-yard sprints, we would do six. And it was really to just invest in those guys so that the cycle of leadership would continue. And the only reason I bring this up is because as a coach, you're going through players at a four-year cycle. And so you might have your captains now, but for you as a coach, you've got to identify those potential leaders that are currently freshmen and sophomores. And so when you look at your team, when you look at the freshmen and sophomores, what kind of intentional conversations are you having with those underclassmen that kind of subtly prepare them for leadership roles once they become juniors or seniors?
Yeah. I think the first thing I would say about the example you gave when you were here and wanting those three freshmen in your group to develop them is you had a clear purpose, you know, and that's what made you a better leader than I ever was as a captain, because, you know, and there's a reason why Kobe Bryant doesn't make this list. There's a reason why Michael Jordan doesn't make this list in Sam Walker's book, is because those guys were working, you know, but they were less interested in making, you know, the next guy, you know, they were making themselves. He referenced Tim Duncan in the book and talks about how Tim Duncan was very purposeful in the way in which he communicated to the kids, the guys on his team, you know, and he would just go in the locker room and have conversations with them and just invest time in them one-on-one, no cameras, no one sees it. You know, just the same as you're doing in these workouts, or as you did back in your time in these workouts. And I think that's really important. I think that can be more important than a coach investing time in those young guys in terms of trying to craft your next leader. I think sometimes these captains can kind of evolve from a player that you least suspected at times, you know, as because if they've done their job early on, they're just fitting in, you know, and they don't stand out. And I think as in your, you've been trained to think one way for so long. So in your captain mind, it's, he's not vocal enough, you know, like I can't see him being a vocal leader, or he's not, you know, I don't think he's going to be good enough. Like, I don't think he's ever going to have a platform because maybe he's not going to be a good enough, you know, you can get all kind of mixed up as to what, early on. And so really it's just a matter of maybe, you know, preaching those four things, you know, like teaching those young guys, like, you need to serve, you know, you need to be relentless. You need to be trustworthy, and you need to be humble and just continually getting them to focus on those words. And then if they can concentrate on that, you know, or maybe you steal it out of the Think Like a Champion book and just tell those guys, you know, those young guys, like, listen, if you want to be successful here, you know, you want to be the next Ryan Cassidy or the next Mike Hoffmeister or the next Zach Goodrich or the next Isaiah Davis Allen. No, here's what you need to do. You need to actively seek to make everything better, you know, and man, if you said that to your freshman class and you got 10 guys in your freshman class, one of them, you know, if you're lucky, you know, one of them as a freshman is going to be able to, you know, to focus on that. So that it just goes back to communicating, you know, and how you communicate and what you're communicating to try to set them up. You can't make it all happen as a coach. You can only try to advise them along the way. And a lot of it just comes down to, I mean, I've given books to captains in the past, or leaders, I should say, and read this book. And, you know, they're almost so nearsighted about, I'm the captain, I'm the face, that they read the book out of excitement and then they don't apply any of it. You know, the number of times I've given books to players and said, hey, you know, go read this. And they feel so honored that they were chosen by the coach, and their ego gets in the way that they don't apply. They actually read it. You know, they're great kids, so they take it, they take the time and read it, and then they don't apply any of it. You know, I can think of a couple years ago, we had a kid who he came up to me and said, I could just tell, like, I'm letting you down. And I said, well, I gave you that book to read. He said, I read it cover to cover. And I handed it back to him and I said, go read it again, but this time apply it. Then he left my office. And that was a real changing point for that kid. And so you can do everything you can, but it's up to that guy to apply all of the things that you're trying to communicate to him.
So this fall, I helped out in Austin with a local high school program. And it was pretty funny, because one of the things that you've talked on is the idea of serving and leading from the front versus leading from behind. And we went to practice, and I couldn't help but kind of cringe when we got to practice. The seniors were yelling at the freshmen to get the cages. And again, just the way that I was raised, the way that I viewed leadership, you know, I wanted to grab that senior by the face mask and say, "This freshmen have no idea where the cages are or where they go. Why don't you lead them and show them how to do it?" For you and with your team, are there any subtle tricks or subtle kind of scenarios that you create to see who those servant leaders are? Whether it's, you know, you have the guys shoot and it's you're just noticing who's going to find the ball that's the farthest, or who's the last guy to come back from a ball hunt, or who's getting the cages out before practice or after practice, or who's helping the trainer fill up the water bottle. Are there any things that or scenarios that you create to just reveal who those servant leaders are within your program?
Yeah, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, the practice ends and you got to put the goals away, or someone's got to take the water back, or it's some sort of, let's call it cleanup, you know. If you bring the seniors over and you say, all right, listen, I don't care how you guys do this, you know, but you guys are responsible for making sure the goals are put away, the water's put away, and the laundry's all taken back. And you just sit back and watch. Half of them are going to delegate, you know, like exactly what you just said, you know, hey, freshman, you're on that goal. Hey, fresh, you know, and you're going to get that guy who's like, all right, coach said, I'm responsible. I'm going to go do it, you know? And what ends up happening is you're giving them an opportunity to kind of show you, you know, am I Am I going to be the captain that everybody, or the leader? Am I going to be the one that everybody perceives, which is the loudest guy on the field who's the best delegator? You know, or am I going to be the one that just does it and no one even knew that I did it? You know, I can think of a guy in our program, who played with you, who wasn't a captain, and he took the water out to every practice and put the water back in. And it took me till, we start practice in January. It took me till April to even realize he was doing it, you know? And I tell that story to people all the time, that he just did it and I didn't even know. And if I, as a coach, had no idea, none of his players did. You know, he was serving them and had no idea he was serving them. But I guarantee you, by May, when they all knew, and at this point, you know, now I found out as a coach, so I start promoting it. You know, did you guys know that Jay Good had been putting the water out? Like, man, he's not even a captain, guys, right? You know, and he's doing this for you. Well, playoff time, people were watching how he was playing, you know, and he had created that platform to be the leader that we needed him to be, you know, in May, by just taking the water out and putting it back in. And no one ever asked him to do it. It was one of those scenarios. Seniors, you're responsible for all these things. And he just took ownership over the water. You know, he let everybody else be the, you know, the guy who breaks the huddle down. He let everybody else be the guy that walks out and he does the coin toss and wears the C on their jersey. He just figured, I'll be the water guy, you know. And by being the water guy, you're being a whole heck of a lot more than just the water guy, I think. So I think that would be my advice to young guys that might be listening to this podcast, is like, what's the one thing that you could do? Again, actively seeking to make everything better. I'll just be the guy that takes care of the water. No one's ever going to have to worry about the water. I'm going to be the guy who carries the bag of jerseys on the bus after a game. And it's just one thing that is going to be my kind of investment into this team in terms of serving. You know, Carla Overbeck carried people's bags. You know, Justin Gordon here at York carried out the water. You got to be willing to serve. And if you are, they'll follow you.
Yeah, and that's something else that I think can kind of get lost when we're just talking about, you know, the captain, is you've got to have that supporting role. And those guys that, you know, I can think of at High Point, there was a guy who wasn't elected captain, but if he spoke in a huddle, everybody listened and everybody completely focused in on what he had to say. When you think about as a team selecting the captains, you know, a lot of times, and it's happened rarely, like I want to say at Virginia, you know, Chris LaPierre was like the solo captain for the first time in like 20 years. When you think about, you know, having a captain versus maybe co-captains or assistant captains, I think is the new thing. And something that a lot of programs have is, you know, something called like a leadership committee. How do you differentiate between, or how do you guys choose having one captain versus maybe having three or four? What is that ideal number if you're going to have multiple captains?
Yeah, this is great. We just made this switch here this year. I believe there's one captain. I think Sam Walker, the author of The Captain's Class, would agree that there's one captain. I think you could ask most people with military background and they'd say there's one captain. I do think when you're dealing with education and kids that are anywhere between the ages of, you know, let's just say 14 to 22, having a singular captain has some drawbacks. You know, again, this is something I spoke to, you know, Coach Starja about, and part of it comes back to that unreasonableness. You know, if you have that one singular voice and he's unreasonable with his expectation of a team, and you're a freshman in that team and you're like, man, I don't know, you know, you might need that other guy. You might need that other guy to go to and say, hey, you know, I just don't think I can do everything that Bray Malfrist is asking me to do right now. And you might need that other guy, you know? And so for that UVA team, it's, you know, Steele Stanwyck, who's, you know, just totally cool, calm and collected and can be, you know, relational probably, you know, and, you know, and relate to that kid. To me, the answer is really simple. You know, I'd ask anyone who's listening to this podcast right now to close your eyes and think of the best captain you've ever had. And it's not going to take you long. You know, you've got him already, might be my guess. And that to me is the point that there's a singular captain. We all have that one guy, you know, and we all do, you know, we all do it better. You know, someone does it better than everybody. So you have that one guy in your program, and the best teams have that singular guy. And so I believe in one guy. The leadership council thing to me is like involving multiple classes, and I think it gets complicated, more complicated than it needs to be. And so what we ultimately did was the assistant captain thing this year. So we have one singular voice of one captain. And then I think the team did a good job here at York. And again, this is an area in which I think if they didn't, I would probably guide them in this direction. But they kind of took our one singular captain's weaknesses and then with the assistant captain kind of filled those weaknesses. And so our one singular captain here at York this year, he is a little uncomfortable by the spotlight. And he isn't really like a – he's never going to be on an interview. He's never going to be the face of the program. He's never going to be and so they filled some of that void with a guy who's a little bit more vocal. They have, you know, one of the assistant captains is like the big brother to the entire team. Any of them can go to him and understand that there's a certain level of empathy that they're going to get. And so our assistant coaches kind of make up for the void of our singular captain that an 18 to 22 year old might need on a bad day. But that one constant guy who's actively seeking to make everything better, even if it means being unreasonable with his standards, I believe there's only one of them. And so that's kind of where we came this year. But this is, again, we don't have all the answers. I certainly don't have all the answers. This is just lots of reading and lots of observing over the years that this is where I am right now. You know, I could listen to a podcast tomorrow that could convince me otherwise, but this is where we are right now, you know, and I really do believe there is, if you've got that one guy, then there's power in empowering that one guy.
If there's an 18-year-old kid that desires to be that singular captain on their team, what piece of advice would you give him right now?
I guess I would say that, like, you know, every day you're in front of your teammates is an audition. You know, everything that you're doing, whether it's serving, whether it's being bold, whether it's your work ethic or setting the standard, but everything that you're doing is an audition for that role. And so never lose focus of the fact that someone's watching, you know, somebody younger in your program is watching you. And so you're auditioning for that role all the time. And so that would be my piece of advice, is to go about your daily, you know, schedule work, whatever you want to call it, with the mindset of I'm auditioning for this role right now. And so I guess Ryan, to throw it right back at you, you know, as a former captain and one that did it quite well, I mean, what piece of advice would you give to a coach? So there's a coach on here, you know, listening, and he's wondering, you know, what piece of advice would his captain give to him as the way in which he can kind of cultivate this culture that, you know, might get them to elect the right guys. What piece of advice would you throw back at us coaches?
I'd say the two really quick things. I know you said for one, but first, I think it's really important to set the standard as to what a captain is. You've got to come to terms with what that looks like. And then you've got to promote those examples and praise that, those actions done by really the captain or those leaders that you're looking for. And then two, I would try and provide opportunities for the guys that you think will be that singular captain to lead. Something that I can draw back when I was at York was that you allowed me to dictate Tuesdays and Thursday mornings as being workout times. And that you allowed me to go to the local tire store and buy old tires. You allowed me to build a relationship with a track coach to where he entrusted me with the speed and agility equipment. And what that did was it enabled me to, again, go back to that Joe Ehrman thing. It allowed me to be a part of something that was bigger than myself. But more importantly, it allowed me to build relationships with my teammates while also setting an example as to what it meant to one, just be on the lacrosse team at York, and then what it meant to be a captain as well. So those are the two pieces of advice I would give. One is really establish what being a captain in your program means, and then two, you've got to facilitate opportunities for those captains to develop relationships with their peers.
I think this was a fun first go, you know, with our podcast, our monthly podcast here, and awesome talking about captains. I think it's something that maybe us in the coaching profession don't think about enough, and we probably don't communicate to our team enough. And so hopefully, you know, our listeners out there get a lot, you know, gain a lot from this, and then you'll tune in, you know, next month as we kind of dive into our next, you know, culture piece to becoming, you know, a great team.
Coach, again, it's always great talking to you.
All right, Ryan, you have a great one. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, see you, Coach.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.